The Brothers Wisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through space on this mothership.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 107. It has been a minute, although I guess you've heard me talking at you for a little bit with the Greg Talk stuff. This is our first official Brothers Wisp cast in a month, and I would say a couple of things have happened since the last time we talked. This go around, we've got Nick Arellano. It's been a minute, boy.
It has.
Boy.
Bye.
And then we've also got Thomas Kiernek from Slovakia.
Hello, hello.
And I guess the only thing in and out of Slovakia right now are the packets, right?
Pretty much.
All right. So let's get the stuff out of the way, and then we'll get down to the talking bit. So this podcast is brought to you by Sonar. That's our sponsor. I had to remember who the sponsor was this go around. I'm checking my notes. I'm professional. I'm on top of these things. Sonar is a scalable, intuitive, and comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system, and you can find them at sonar.software. I would suggest you guys go over there and take a look and make your life a little bit easier. So here's the thing. I've been stressing about it a lot. I'm trying to avoid information on it because I am just sick to death of it, and I figured if we're going to talk about it, let's talk about it one time and be done with it. And it's the COVID-19, the coronavirus. Obviously, it's the biggest part of everybody's life at the moment, it seems. So if we must talk about it, let's talk about it and then be done. Let's exorcise the demons, even if it's not done with us. So I guess as it relates to us, a lot of conferences have been canceled, rightly so. You've got Wisp America that we have now, all of them. Wisp America was canceled. That was supposed to be coming this week, I think, right? Or next week? I think it was this week. Like,
it was supposed to be happening right now.
Oh, okay. There you go. It's supposed to be happening right now, and it is not. And then also,
I think Monday was the first day.
First official, okay. And then US Mom, which is about a month from now, has been canceled as well. You know, I was thinking about these conferences being canceled and kind of the core of it, and what do people go there for? One, I think, in my opinion, it's camaraderie, right? To see their friends, to be 100% transparent. That's the reason I go, is to see you guys, because I never get to see you guys in person. It's the only time we really get to hang out and have real conversations where we're not on a mic being recorded. Because no matter any time you call me, I'm recording the conversation for later evidence. I was thinking, you know, the core component of that, you know, recording these things, and because that, you know, that's what the mom does. They record all the presentations and they play them back and stuff. So outside of actually getting to physically see your friends, part of it is, well, I guess talking to vendors too. That's one thing you're going to miss out on, is to be able to, you know, establish relationships. You know, because a lot of times a sale happens in person with these vendors, and you know, you can really get to know the people you're going to be working with on the product, or the people that are going to be supporting you. I know there's a lot of folks, like the pre-seam guys, like a lot of their engineers or whatever happen to show up at those things. But outside of that, it's going to be the presentations. And I was thinking, you know, what prevents them from organizing some way for the presenters to go ahead and stream presentations? So, like, if you ever watch Twitch, you'll know that there's a lot of marathons that are organized. Like, AGDQ is an in-person marathon, but there's other ones that are really big ones where the person's streaming from their house, and so they just have one primary live stream going, and whenever it's Greg's turn, they just pull his feed in, you know, from his camera, and then just plug it in, and he does his run, and then they just transition to the next and the next. And I don't know what would keep Wisp America folks or the Microtik folks from trying to do something similar. You know, even if they didn't want it to be live, you could still record your stuff in advance and distribute it to them and have them put it up. I hate the idea that this stuff's going to go in the garbage. I know my presentation, I'm going to go ahead and record it. I'm going to put it up on YouTube like I always do ahead. How about you, Thomas? Well, I mean, have you, your presentation, you go ahead and bake it and get it ready to go? Or, I mean, what do you think?
No, I don't know yet. So, like, usually my, at least the presentations I do on YouTube, don't have that much viewership, as of course there is people, you know, at the actual conference, and right, there is always questions, you know, it's always different with people being Absolutely. There reacting and asking the things they don't understand live, because you know, the people understand different things differently, you know, being presented differently. Some will understand it, some won't. And it's helpful for everyone to have the questions of, you know, if one person didn't understand something, if you can present it differently or tell it in a different way around, it might be entirely possible that, you know, that will benefit multiple other people who also, if you know what I mean. So I don't know what to do. I really like the live aspect of presentations. I always hold Q&A sessions after each like topic in my presentation. I've moved away from like having a big Q&A session after the presentation. I don't think that's really that helpful. You know, there is a lot of information you give out in that, you know, 45 minutes if it's like topics like IPsec and stuff like that, which I usually do and I was going to do this year as well. So I don't know. I haven't decided yet, but I'm going to miss the live part of it either way.
Yeah, well, I mean, too, like with Twitch, there's the live chat there. I know it's not exactly the same thing, and sometimes it's hard to put into text what you're thinking out loud, or maybe it won't translate over well, whenever you actually do put it in text, right? Because inflection is a lot, you know, in your body language and stuff. But I'm just trying to think of alternatives. Man, I just hate to see everybody's life get disrupted so much that we can't find some normalcy in this stuff and still get benefit from this. I've already put, it boils down to I've already put in a lot of work and I don't want to waste it. I want to put it towards something. And so, I would really love
supposedly that. The months are not really canceled as much as postponed, right? So you have 3 months at this point. It was the Prague month, which was 3,000 people. You know, that's a huge conference. And then there was also the Mexico MUM, which I think is also like 3,000 or 3,500, which is also huge, right? And then there, of course, there is the US one. So it's three, you know, of the biggest events. Of course, probably the biggest one is Indonesia, which, you know, that one is, still has a ways to go. But it's probably, you know, three of the most, either biggest or most important events Microtik has. So I don't think they're going to completely can them. Just hopefully they will just reschedule them after all this mess is done.
So it also kind of got me on the path of thinking of if you didn't try and live stream those things, what would keep us from putting together a small sort of one? You know, like hollering at the WISP America folks, people that were going to be on panels or stuff like that, and maybe trying to arrange a day where, you know, we can actually stream some of this stuff live, you know, get everybody together just as an idea.
I think most of the people I've talked to, it comes down to like how much they paid dollar amount wise. And a lot of them like to have drinks with the vendors and stuff, not so much the talks there. It's talking with the vendors and networking with people. So I've already been kind of poking around Facebook and seeing some of the responses people have. And overwhelmingly, a lot of people don't want an online conference. They just want a refund.
So, I mean, to me, that's the value of WISP America, is I actually get to sit down and meet people and get to know them and stuff like that, as opposed to the, I mean, the information's great too, but and as well with the MUMs, to be honest with you, outside of the presentations I'm usually involved with, if you're not a good friend of mine, I'm probably not going to sit in your presentation. If I want to catch something, I'll usually watch it later on the stream or whatever. Just, I don't know, it just seems like your time there is limited and it's valuable to me to be able to spend it with other people. So, I don't know. It's tough. Let's see. So, of those people that tried to cancel their hotels and flights and stuff like that, I've been hearing people having success, so that's good. I still haven't killed my mom stuff. I need to go ahead and do that. Expedia sent out an email asking people please not to try and cancel anything unless you're 7 days out from your flight, because they're so inundated with people right now they can't handle the volume. So I might have to wait a little bit before I do that, but that's unfortunate for sure. Let's see what other news came out of this. Hangouts, Zoom, Cisco, you know, like WebEx, Camtasia. There's a lot of people that are offering free services for a few months, right? For like work remote, work from home sort of solutions. I thought that was kind of cool and obviously clever on their part, right? You know, get people to use their product, find out they like it, and then continue to use it. If the volume of people that are fixing to start working from home and doing everything from home, I wonder if they can actually handle that kind of influx on their services if they really had people take them up on it. I'm assuming they probably could, because it's not like everybody's going to use it at once, right? Any of this stuff attract you guys? Any interest in testing out any of this stuff, seeing as though they're making it free?
Yeah. Some of the stuff is cool. Even like Discord, they upped the free tier to like 50 live stream feeds or something. I think it's nice that they're helping people connect, but looking at all the bandwidth graphs, all the IXs and stuff are getting hammered with everyone on the internet all day now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. At the data center, we've had a lot of customers up their bandwidth caps and their burstability, as well as we've had even more people just inquire of what's the process for us to be able to up our bandwidth at the data center. You know, let's get everything in place, get everything locked and loaded just in case we need to. I guess everybody's just going ahead and, it seems like the bigger boys are going ahead and being preemptive. And, you know, I mean, and that's, it's really a shrewd move. If you're in a data center, you've got an ISP that is flexible, go ahead and up your burst ability. Right, so if they don't make you take more commit, why not just open up your burst capabilities and be ready for it? Seems like a good idea. Obviously, I would always suggest to customers that do that kind of thing is put a hard cap on your side just in case. Anyway, just so things don't get out of control completely, and then all of a sudden you get a surprise bill. But it's nice to have a little flexibility, because I mean, you know, it happens. Stuff happens. Oh man, so I've got some online presentations I'm going to be doing pretty soon. And I am a very visual person. I'm assuming most network folks probably are pretty visual, right? And I picked up a pen tab. It's like, what is this thing? An XP pen. That's nice. It's just one of those cheapskates. It's like 4 inches by 6 inches. It was like $30. Just USBs in and then shows up as a mouse. And I was using Paint 3D on my computer. And I was just practicing so far. And at first, it kind of looked like a little kid trying to draw a potato, but I started getting better at it, you know, more adept at just getting comfortable with it. And it seems like it'll actually work pretty well for doing online kind of sketching and presentation. Have you guys ever tried to do that, like live where you're talking to somebody and sketch with your computer? Have you attempted any of that? I was just curious what the best software for that sort of thing is. And Paint 3D seems to work fine. I was just curious if there's something better or a little bit smoother. Any ideas?
In the past I've used an iPad with the Apple Pencil. It's kind of like makes it easy to do that kind of stuff, to share the iPad screen, and there's a bunch of different software, and having something to write with definitely helps a lot. Circle things, draw lines, paths, and stuff.
Yeah, I'm horrible. I am crap at drawing with a mouse, so I knew that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm going to end up doing this a lot more, I was thinking I really need some kind of usable solution, so seems like it works. I don't know. But that's pretty much all the notes I had on there until we get to the wrap-up part. What do you guys have to say in general? So give us the European perspective on it, Thomas, on all this COVID-19 stuff, because our media over here is pretty sideways. I mean, I think the world knows that, how the U.S. views their media stuff. Fox News is pretty optimistic. Everybody else is pretty pessimistic. I don't know. It's all just crazy and kind of hard to keep up with at this point. I see Mikey joining, and he better get on TriCast before he talks, or I'm going to punch him in the jaw.
I was on TriCast before I joined Skype.
All right, thank goodness, because you will get all kinds of jacked up. Thomas was about to tell us about his impressions of COVID-19 over from the European perspective.
I mean, Europe at this point is literally on a lockdown. So, for example, Slovakia, all out of country and into country, public transport is completely canceled. So unless you are a Slovakian citizen, you aren't getting into the country. And if you want to get out of the country, you have to do it on your own. There is no public transportation out of the country. All the airports are completely closed. And it's like that basically in most of Europe at this point.
So flights aren't even going just in the country itself?
Yeah, your airports are completely closed. And it's so Slovakia has this since the about the middle of last week. Czech Republic, there is quite an outbreak in Prague, so they also have very strict rules like this. So of course, all the schools, public gatherings, you know, cultural events, museums, whatever, are completely closed in Slovakia and in Czech Republic as well. And yeah, it's just basically a lockdown. Like businesses haven't been closed yet, so we are still going to work and like people are still around. It's just all mass gatherings are basically completely closed. Italy, on the other hand, is completely shut down. So in Italy, people are just sitting home because the government mandated a mandatory business close. So completely everything other than drugstores and food stores are closed. And so Italy currently has the second biggest infection rate in the world after China. And it's basically the infection hub of Europe, so most of the infections came from there. And so Italy is completely shut down totally. Slovakia is so far only in isolation, you could say, and Czech Republic as well. Business is still open, but we'll see how it goes. It's causing serious troubles, of course, because with schools being closed, it means all the students are home, which means all, like, college and, you know, higher level education people went home, which means they're not working. And of course, other people which are working, which have their kids home, aren't coming to work because, right, you know, somebody has to take care of the kids. So for example, for us, we had 5 people out of 14 in offices on Friday. So that's like, you know, our company is at 1/3 work capacity at the moment, which, wow, is, as you can imagine, causing quite a bit of trouble.
Pretty devastating, so, yeah.
And we are not sure how long the lockdown is going to last. Like currently it's scheduled until the end of March, so 2 more weeks of basically, you know, company being, or pretty much all businesses being at 1/3 normal capacity. But there is talks about extending basically the quarantine by 2 more weeks, but it's just, you know, talks. So we don't know yet. It depends how things evolve.
What's the panic level of the average Slovakian over there? Or like, what's the temperature you think?
It depends on who you ask. Personally, I'm not really panicking. I think like there are measures, whether they're, you know, too much or too little, everybody has an opinion. You just have to respect those quarantine measures either way. I personally am not really worried about us or our company. We aren't closing the company, but then if you ask around, there's been so panic buying hasn't occurred yet. Like people are not yet panic buying.
Oh, thank goodness.
Like so stores are stocked, restaurants are, remote delivery for restaurants is working. Like restaurants which are, you know, which have an actual restaurant, those are closed because public gathering is prohibited. Oh, wow. But like restaurants are delivering, food stores and drug stores are stocked so far, so I don't think there is like mass hysteria or panic yet. Certainly people are spooked, definitely. Like that's, you know, if you open Facebook or news or local TV stations or radio, it's all everybody talks about. The media is just completely overblowing their coverage of this, which I suppose is the same in the US as well. But so yeah, so far it's definitely having an effect on life, 100%, but it's nothing really which I would be concerned about yet.
Do you think the lack of panic buying is kind of a cultural difference, like for Slovakians? Do you think that kind of speaks to the way you guys think and feel? Because Americans are losing their shit.
I think it's because generally we're stupid in America.
I mean, that goes for a lot of things in America. You can explain, what do they say, never assume malice when ignorance is an obvious answer. So that works a lot for America. I mean, our grocery store shelves are empty. So I've got this friend of mine, she's 73 years old, and she lives in this retirement community near Austin called Sun City. And so she tried to go to the grocery store.
Is it a Del Webb community?
Yeah,
I think Del Webb has a whole bunch of
real big
Sun
ones.
City communities.
She tried to go to the grocery store, and they had a line out the door. They're only letting so many people in. you know, and they're basically rationing products. Like, as people come through, you can only buy so many things. You can only buy so many things because people are just losing their minds. I mean, there's like our grocery stores, there's like virtually no meat. There's no like frozen vegetables in our area. I don't know if I'm assuming it's not the same way across all of the U.S. Hopefully maybe people in the North have a little bit more sense.
Nope.
But, and you know, so those people start panic buying. So what do you have to do? You know, you have to actually get a little bit more stuff when the opportunity arises because all these other idiots are going to take it all. So it just kind of feeds on itself. And to be honest with you, I've quarantined myself from Facebook. So I'm not getting on there for the foreseeable future because it is sucking the life out of me. It's like making me so upset. And nothing right now. I haven't. The only good thing that comes out of this are all the memes I see people posting. But there's not enough memes to outweigh all the stuff that's just breaking my heart as I'm scrolling down my feed. So I'm done with that. So unless you guys post memes in the Slack, I'm not gonna see it on Facebook.
So what you're saying is that we need to make a memes channel so that people who are on Facebook can then paste the memes there.
Well, I mean, we even have like a COVID-19 channel in the Slack, and I may be done with that one for a while too because it is just, man, it is just sucking the life out of me. It really is.
If the Slack channel is sucking life out of you, then yeah, do not go on Facebook. Do not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I would say over a third of the posts I see are people trying to figure out where to buy water, who has water, who has toilet paper, what pictures of empty shelves, and it's like people are panicking about buying water. I'm like, we all have taps. Yeah. You know, we're in America. We're not in some third world country. You just turn the faucet
it's
on and water comes out of it.
To give you water, and it's continued to be chlorinated, and you know, everything's going to be, it's insane. And toilet paper. We manufacture the toilet paper here in the United States. We're not reliant on China or Italy for our toilet paper. Why are you buying all of it?
One thing, though, is that you learn just how little exposure there is in the general public to anything outside of a big box store. A couple of the towns whose, you know, self-organized Facebook groups I've joined, they have like a little locally owned grocery store, and like people are just raging on them for price gouging when that's their normal price. Like, you know, Walmart is $6, Target is $9, and these guys are $12. And they're raging on them for jacking the price because it's $12. And it's like, I think it's always $12.
Yeah, yeah. Those little corner stores out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, it's because the box stores have been raided. And so now it's just, you know, where can I possibly get this?
Yeah.
Oh, this other place?
And it's times like this that the dregs of society always come out. So you're always going to see the worst of people in this scenario. You know, it's your $120 bottle of Purell on eBay or whatever. You know what I mean? You're always going to see this crap in these times. And, you know,
literally a fight at the Naperville Costco over toilet paper. It was like a fist fight. It's insane.
I think they closed for like 2 hours over it.
Yep.
That's crazy. What did I see? Like
absolutely crazy.
A shirt or a cup that said "Panic at the Costco." You know, it's just But so I try and like think of how can I lift myself up? How can I feel better about all this bullshit? Because that's what it is. I mean, it's. I'm not saying that the virus isn't, but it's just the way people are reacting and just the way they're just feeding into this cesspool of fear. It just I'm not for that, and so. Mr. Rogers, I never watched him much, but he has this quote, this famous quote, and he said whenever he would see scary stuff on the news, his mom would say, look for the helpers, because in any disaster, in any trying time, there's always people around that are helping. And I was thinking, I want to be one of those helpers in this scenario. So I'm not exactly sure how to do that. I know I've started trying to like make sort of this network of people that are like in my community. And I say, hey, we've got this stuff. If you guys somehow run out because everybody's going crazy, panic buying, you need a thing, we have this thing that we can share with you. And other people are starting to do that. So I think that's kind of one way that you can just, you know, lean on the people you care about and then try and support each other as best you can. But also just putting it out there to the, you know, to the internet, to anybody listening to this, if there's a way that I can help you or be of service in some way in this situation, I'm absolutely here for it. As long as you don't cough on me, I'm happy to help in any way that I can. And I have the feeling that most of the folks that listen to this podcast probably feel the same way. And so, you know, if there's some way that you think you can help others in this scenario, I think that would go a long way. Because a lot of people, it seems like, are really trying to recoil from everybody else, you know, and lock themselves in their house and hold their shotgun next to them, you know, just waiting for somebody to cough so they can blast them. I don't know what else to say about this other than, you know, hopefully things get better. I feel like they're probably going to get a little bit worse here in the U.S. As soon as we start getting real testing kits out here, when we start really testing people, I think we're going to see it's much worse than we had originally anticipated. You know, a lot of people are upset that they're canceling all this stuff, but it's a chicken or egg scenario, I think, too, right? Like, you know, if we cancel all this public stuff and we really lock it down, and then 6 months from now, people will say, God, why did we panic so much? You know, the reason everything probably went according to plan is because we did do that, right? So I'd rather be safe than sorry in these scenarios, and hopefully we all come out of it fairly unscathed.
I think a large part of it, of all the closures and, you know, quarantine and everything else, is just, I think it's two parts. First of all, there is no better plan, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody was prepared for this. There was no way to anticipate it, and therefore there is just no better plan or better alternative how to deal with this, right? And second of all, as it goes with humans and people, nobody wants to be responsible. You know, it's like, if this does turn out to be something bad, like, I don't know, you know, the mortality rate is 4% of COVID-19, so it's a 4% of the planet population dies for some reason, you know, everybody will want to be clean, like, yeah, we did everything we could, you know, it's not on our conscience. So I think that's a big part of it too. And it's the combination of all of this, you know, lack of a better plans and you know, people just not wanting to be held responsible and accountable. Like you said, Greg, it's just better be safe than, you know, be blamed for later. And I think, for example, here in Europe, that's why you see such drastic quarantine measures, because, you know, it's what governments feel obliged to do to keep the population happy and to be able to say with their own, you know, we did the best we could.
Well, I think, too, a lot of the people that are in government that are making these decisions are in the primary crosshairs for COVID-19, right? So it's the older generation, the baby boomers and stuff like that, that are most susceptible to this. And these are probably most of the people passing these restrictions and laws. So I'm not saying it's self-serving, but, you know, they're definitely the, what did I say? They're the, like, there was a pickleball tournament I was supposed to play in, and it's mostly people like 55 and older. And I was saying it's like a COVID-19 buffet, right? It's, you know, it's like the target audience for that. So I guess that kind of makes sense too. But really, you know, who wants to look their neighbor in the eye and say, you know, I'm sorry your husband or wife died because I hesitated and didn't do something quick enough.
Right.
Right. And not to say that these people aren't still going to get infected and they still aren't going to have severe complications. But theoretically, if we lower the curve, you know, if we slow it down, then our medical support system can actually sustain the number of people that are sick, hopefully, and fewer people die from it or have long-term lingering reactions and things like that. So it is what it is. Hopefully we'll get through it. I mean, humans are survivors, right? We've been trying to kill ourselves for hundreds of thousands of years and we haven't done it yet. So I assume we'll make it through one way or the other.
One of these days.
Yeah. I mean, eventually we'll get it right, you know.
It is crazy. This is kind of like a social and healthcare denial of service type situation. It's just like, it's going crazy. Everybody's asking, so what is your game plan in response to the coronavirus? Like, where I work, customers are asking, you know, what's your plan? There's people getting VPN access concentrators, trying to get everyone their laptops, because now that it's blowing up, employees are asking, like, what are we doing about this? What? Are we going to work from home? How do we facilitate that?
Yeah, what happens when I get quarantined for 2 weeks, you know?
Right.
Or I need to self-isolate because I was, you know, and just whatever. That's, I mean, yeah, that's why all these people are beefing up their pipes. Some of our sister companies were prepping them to do all this work from home stuff. And, you know, I keep hearing a lot of questions. Hey, can we all of a sudden have 200 extra VPN connections on this thing? It's like, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe.
So I've been hearing a lot of stuff like that.
I saw, I think it was on Nanog, a lot of people talking about how it was just a few months ago that like their company transitioned to, I can't remember the wording they used, but basically that they didn't need VPNs anymore. Everything was just web accessible.
Everything's just in the cloud.
And it was just, you know, had, you know, proper, you know, web authentication methods. And so that they're glad because they didn't think that they'd have the VPN capacity to accommodate everybody on a VPN, but the servers obviously have capacity to do the work because they're already doing the work. It's just going to a different IP address.
One can hope.
But on a kind of a tangent from that, unlike the, you know, healthcare DOS, I had seen an article, and I don't know the credentials of the guy or how accurate the information is, but you know, it was fairly lengthy, and had, you know, pretty pictures and graphs and stuff, and he's talking about the whole flatten the curve thing. Mm-hmm. You know, to bring demand down to within capacity so that we can handle it. And he was saying that it's a nice theory, but the implementation is much more difficult given the actual numbers. The actual, you know, using the percentages and expected growth rates and things that have been published, he's saying that the flattening of the curve has to be almost a decade to actually fit within the healthcare system's capacity. Wow. Like, flattening it for 2 weeks or a month isn't going to do anything if, you know, I forget the percentages, but, you know, if it was in the U.S., if 180 million get sick, you know, only a small portion of that actually need healthcare, but there's only, like, I forget the number they said, you know, 100, 200, something like that, 1,000 beds in the U.S., and that there's already people in them, so what is it, you know, a third or a half of those beds are actually available, so then there's not that many that could actually be sick out of that 180 million at any one time. You know, it's not, there's just not the capacity to solve this in a month. So if we're going to be flattening the curve, you know, you have to flatten it over a much, much longer amount of time. And so then, but, you know, to kind of bring the IT element back in, you know, it's kind of something that, you know, we have to kind of capacity plan for. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, who's getting their pants, or, you know, getting caught with their pants down when they have a DDoS and they can't handle the capacity. It's like, well, you know, I'll buy another 10 gig. Well, you know, sometimes you just have to, and there's no parallel for this in the healthcare, but, you know, go to a Prolexic or someone like that to absorb it for you, you know.
You know, it's
you just can't do that in healthcare.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I was thinking about just on my network infrastructure, we have so many people requesting additional resources. And I said to my guys, I was like, dude, we can handle so much capacity. We have so much overhead right now, just available room. And then I was thinking, you know what? I bet that's what everybody's thinking. And so if all these people start utilizing it, then then upstreams and IXs are going to choke. And it's not, so it's like, it doesn't matter how much capacity I have purchased. If those guys can't supply it, I'm kind of screwed. I can just imagine we're gonna get the heat of this, and then Call of Duty is going to put out an update and crash everybody's networks.
Drop out those 60 gig updates.
Yeah, that, for everybody. That's what we really need to quarantine, is those Call of Duty updates during this disaster.
It's I've seen people talk about, you know, what's the expected demand on their network. So I'm like, well, it's be no different than prime time because the kids will be home from school just watching Netflix. They're not doing their e-learning. The parents that are home from school or from work or whatever, you know, I've seen people work from home. Most people don't work from home. They just go home and get paid to do whatever they're going to do at home.
I think, yeah. So I think your regular your regular desk job, they're not going to know how to properly transition. I think they're it's probably going to be problematic for them.
Right. It's like, and it's everything across the board is like damned if you do and damned if you don't, because if they keep people at the office and one person gets sick and then everybody gets sick,
wipe everybody
now out. The business has to shut down. But then if you have to figure out how to get people to work from home, people don't know how to coordinate remote employees and make sure people are actually productive, but also not overwork people,
yeah.
Because it's a whole different mindset when you're at home at your own desk and not in an office environment. So
we have one of our customers do kind of waves. So they took waves of their employees and they sent them home and they said, you're going to work from home 2 days and then you're going to come back and you're going to tell us everything that you had problems with, everything you need. And so they just kind of did it in waves starting a week ago, I think. And that way, obviously they're not going to solve all the problems and find all of the issues, but they're at least, you know, prepping for it. It's, you know, it, when they have a little bit of time, instead of, hey, let's flip the switch now and we have no idea what's fixing to happen, they're at least trying to get ahead of it a little bit, which makes sense.
And you got to worry about your kids on top of
yeah.
what it would be to work from home. And a lot of people are freaked out, so you can't expect top production. People aren't used to it, so it's just weird.
Speaking of some employees that I know, I don't know their productivity could get much lower.
Well, nothing to lose then.
Shit.
So hopefully the COVID-19 doesn't have much of an impact.
All right. Well, do you guys want to move on to a better topic or rather a happier topic?
Happier.
Or do you guys want to any last words on this?
I think it's just facts. People should stick to facts rather than, you know, apocalyptic sure. scenarios yeah. and panicking.
Yeah, please don't get your news from Facebook, you know. Probably go to the WHO, the CDC, you know, the reputable outlets. Please don't read what your cousin Bob has to say about it.
I think the best example is actually, you know, the Wuhan province in China where everything started. You know, this is a 11 million city. Wuhan. And this is a Chinese 11 million city, meaning everybody is clumped together. This is not like a, you know, 100 by 100 miles city. This is tiny. So the outbreak happened there, and altogether there was 80,000 people who got sick out of 11 million in a city where it started. This is under 1%. And out of those 1%, 3.4% actually died, right? So this is like 0.0034%, right? So and this so if you think about it this way, you know, and of course there was quarantine in China and everything else, but it shows that those measures are effective. And right now China is reporting less cases than Europe, for example. And this is China, so, you know, those numbers could be skewed. But even if you multiply that by 2 or 3, it's still, like, tiny, right? So the reality is, I am not saying that this is not something that should be taken seriously, right? But the number and facts, you know, show that this is not something that you have, like, a, you know, 50% probability you will die. No, realistically, it's 0.003%. chance that something will die to you, which is pretty much the same chance when, you know, you do like skydiving, right? Or any more adrenaline based sport. So it's really, yeah, it should not be taken seriously, but there is no reason to panic.
Excellent.
Well, China also had like specialized clinics, like they already had infrastructure in place for quarantine people for these types of situations. I think they said it took a total of 4 hours between the initial examination, getting CT scans done, and confirming whether or not they had the infection. And so they kind of had some infrastructure in place for this, but still, that is pretty crazy with their density that they were able to mitigate this so quickly.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of these bird flu, swine flus, N1H1, they come out of these wet markets in China. So they come out of these wet markets, they close the wet markets for a few months, and then as soon as it's passed over, they open those jokers back up. Hopefully,
waiting for the next one.
Hopefully they can do something about that this go around, and save all of us, you know, another, I mean, I'm trying to figure out, you know, how effective I am going to be at wiping my butt with my hand. You know, and how many times I think I'm going to wash it for longer than 20 seconds. You know, I sing Come On Arlene. Boy, I don't know what song you sing while you're washing your hands. Boy, my hands are clean.
Well, there's a lot of Facebook ads for bidets now, so you can order those and install them.
Dude, I have been fishing to get one of those for a while. I think I finally got my wife on board. One of those nice, like, ones that warm the water and everything. I think I would be on. I transitioned to using, like, the dude wipe things, the small ones that are flushable, you know, the compact ones. I'm a new man. I am. They're great. So I think I'm full on board for, you know, the car wash downstairs, whatever, the Toto wash lead or the, I don't know, the little things you put in there, man. I could do that. I could see myself doing that for sure. I could go further, but I just decided not to. So
I think that was good.
We're probably,
yeah, that was pretty good.
I'll save it for this. All right, let's get on to more, happier, interesting things than that. Some far less depressing. So one is I have my second CCNA course just went live, which I am so thankful for LinkedIn allowing me to do this stuff. So it went live about a week ago. It's the second part. So there's going to be three parts. I'm not sure when the third part's going to be released. I've already recorded it, delivered all that stuff. I think they said that they just went through beta and everything looks clean, so I don't have to do any edits. Which means they're going to ask me for the, question answer thing? I always wait to the very last minute till they like demand I have it within a few days, and then I'll actually do it. So that's rapidly approaching. But go click on that thing. I get like a couple of cents every time you do. So thank you guys and appreciate it. I saw recently, I don't remember why I was on Fiberstore, but I was on Fiberstore, and I saw that they now have, and maybe they've had this for a while, but they have wireless controller and access point. I thought that was interesting. Do you guys feel the need to, like, is there a hole in the market that we needed Fiberstore to start carrying this stuff? What do you think?
Not at all.
It feels like a really saturated part of the market. Their controllers are $1,300 and their APs range from $69, $108, and $300.
So there is a hole, but this product doesn't fill it. The hole is that there are very few platforms that are as easy to use for the low skilled person as Unify. But Unify has a broad range of shortcomings. So there is a hole for something that is easy to use for a layperson and yet, you know, lets you configure more than one WAN IP or does one-to-one NAT or lets you see logs.
Yeah, that's one gripe I have about the Unifies. There's not like good debug information sort of in there. So if somebody's having a problem, you know, really be able to troubleshoot it as effectively. But you're right. I mean, it is the easiest thing to use, especially for a layperson. I would feel much more comfortable giving somebody access to Unify if they're, you know, if they just want to look at graphs and stuff, then say Caps Man, they're going to be lost.
Of the other manufacturers that are out there, I mean, are any of them as easy to use as Unify? You know, I would expect Microtik. No, they're not known for easy to use interfaces. Tom Smith, but I mean, Aruba's and Cisco's and I don't even know everybody.
Yeah, Cisco's, like, wireless LAN controllers is it's just as ugly as FiberStore's LAN controllers or WAN controllers, wireless LAN controllers interface is. Maybe Meraki. I've never looked at the Meraki interface. Maybe it's a little bit easier.
It's not very good.
All right. Well, there you go.
So yes, there is a hole. It's just that nobody seems able to fill the hole.
Yeah, it's more of a software hole than a hardware hole.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, maybe there's an API on this thing. Maybe you can roll your... But nobody wants to do that.
With FiberStore, I wouldn't... That's what I would be worried about. So I've used a lot of FiberStore switches, and you can tell they try to get really close to, like, the Cisco CLI. But they've had typos where words are misspelled between firmware, and my biggest concern would be actually being able to get logs out of these things and manage them outside of their horrible, really dated, like, web GUIs.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't trust it after the switch experiences.
I like how stuff that configures like Cisco, they generally refer to it as industry standard CLI. That's usually the marketing term for we're very Cisco like, but just different enough to annoy you. So be ready.
Also, with FiberStore, like talking about the switches, like just about every single FiberStore switch model has a different operating system, a different CLI, and a different, you know, way to configure it. These are OEM switches with reference operating systems or OEM operating systems. You know, FiberStore doesn't have their own firmware division, doesn't have their own software, OS, Linux division, whatever you want to call it, right? And I would be very afraid that the same fragmentation will happen in all their other product lines as well. You know, you will get suddenly a second generation of wireless, and it won't be backwards or forwards compatible at all with anything. It will have a completely different way to configure it. It's what FiberStore does. And I know because we have 6 separate FiberStore switch drivers in Unimus.
Yeah, I guess to that point, you don't know if they're going to stop carrying that model of access point tomorrow, right? For that matter, you just...
Yeah, and if it's not forwards and backwards compatible with the controller, you're done there, right? Yeah. You can't expand anymore. You can't do anything. So, yeah, just FiberStore... Be careful when you're buying it and deploying it, or rather be aware of what those things really are and how they function.
So just buy the fiber. Just buy fiber. Leave the other stuff.
I like their optics too. I think their optics are great. I've always had good success with them.
I've bought WDM, you know, passive gear and optics, and it's worked, but...
And I like their enclosures too. Their enclosures, but their LIUs, those are good.
But so as somewhat of a tangent here from the topic. So one of Ubiquiti's shortfalls is lack of diagnostic logging information. And in the Unified Controller, there is a place to choose a syslog server to send things to. Have any of you ever configured that and seen if the syslog server has useful logs sent to it?
You're going to get basically the same stuff that's in the event log in the controller.
So almost useless.
I've scoured through MongoDB to see what's in there. I've looked through the log files, and there's nothing. So when you've got a bunch of wireless problems and you just see client was disconnected, no reason why, no signal threshold issue, like it's pretty much useless when you have to troubleshoot like large scale wireless issues, and then waiting to do spectrum scans, you have to wait a minimum of 5 minutes for them to scan just to see what the environment looks like. It's horrible.
Because I had thought about that. I haven't dug too deep into it yet because I got angry at the router and rebooted it before, but I'm trying to track down a DHCP issue, and it's like, do I know that it's sending the request? I don't know. I found some discussion. Actually, it was somebody in the Slack linked to a an Edge Router post where they said, you know, here's what they did on the Edge Router to get to the underlying, you know, Linux logs for the DHCP server. I haven't tried that yet, but that was one of those things where it's like, you know, is that maybe shipped off to Syslog? You know, maybe the device Syslog. I don't know. I haven't gotten that far, but sounds like there's not a lot of opportunity for it, so I guess we'll see.
No, they're too busy sending all your information to their servers, and you're not able to turn it off. So,
just email Ubiquiti; they'll give you all the logs. They have all of.
They know exactly why your phone won't connect, but they're not going to tell you.
It just blows my mind that this is it's targeted for enterprise, but if you have more than a single public IP, you can't use them without modifying like the JSON config file. Like, you can't use multiple IPs. You can't really do any. Like NATing across multiple IPs on more than one WAM port, like all that stuff, you have to dive into their JSON config file and then restart the service and then hope it doesn't break.
It's
crazy.
Or hope that the next update doesn't just completely invalidate the way you built your JSON. Like, I've heard that's a problem too.
Speaking of the Ubiquiti Fiber stuff, the ONT and OLT, they run EdgeOS, which is the same as HD Edge Router, right? And so on EdgeOS, you have quite a few useful commands, you know, like show configuration commands, etc. But it turns out the fiber configuration, the actual hardware fiber configuration, is not in there. So it runs EdgeOS, but none of the fiber configuration is present in EdgeOS. It's present in two separate configuration files, /config/fiber.json and some config2.json. And there is no way for you to configure it from EdgeOS. There is no way to retrieve it from EdgeOS. You have to go all the way down to the file system to retrieve those files, and they're a completely separate entity from EdgeOS. And I can only guess that, you know, somebody at Ubiquiti in the management level said, you know, this hardware has got to go out now, and EdgeOS was completely not ready for integration with the, you know, ONT and OLT and the fiber stuff. And so they hacked it all together to somehow work, but EdgeOS is completely unaware that it's running on a fiber-capable ONT/OLT/device. So, yeah, thanks, Ubiquiti.
Yeah, and I was just looking at the Leaf switch. That's supposed to be like a Unify switch for some reason. So it runs like the Unify software and it runs the EdgeOS software, but like the inform and actual adoption stuff doesn't work at all. So like you can only configure it through like the command line, but the command line is like some of the stuff is brand new because there's a ton of features that don't exist on any other hardware yet. Lots of data center features, but there's no documentation, obviously, because it's a beta product. But it's just sitting on the bench because I can't do anything with it. But it's like it's got multiple operating system. It says UBOS on it now, on some other like kernel. And Ubiquiti kept emailing. So, do you have any pictures of your deployment of the Leaf? It's like it's not anywhere. It's just powered up and I can't do anything with it, so I don't know what they're doing.
Take a picture of it propping up your dinner table, like leveling it out.
Right.
Sort of thing. Yeah, sure, here it is. It's my doorstop. That's interesting. The Leaf, that's wasn't it like a 48 port 10 gig or something like that? Wasn't it like
it's
some
like
monster?
10 most of the ports are 1025 and then it has like 100 gig ports.
There you go.
Or something. Yeah. It's a pretty cool looking switch, but it doesn't have an operating system that it picked. It's like got all this crap loaded on it. There's tons of commands in the CLI, but I couldn't get a lot of the stuff to work. And it's hard to test equipment like that without getting out a whole bunch of other 10 gigabit
right.
stuff. And
I saw a fiber store. I don't know, man. Sometimes it's just the mood hits me and I just poke around on people's websites. They have a new switch, or at least they're saying it's new. And I think it's like a 32-port switch, and each port is like 400 gig interfaces. So it'll do 400 gig or 100 gig. And then I think it's got its two management interfaces or 10 gig interfaces. That made me laugh so hard. What a world we live in now where your management network is running on 10 gig. I think it has one copper gig port on it, though. So it's technically you could still manage it through that, but it listed the 10 gigs as management. And maybe even it does. I think those ports even have a capability of doing like 425 gig off of each one, like with an adapter or something. I don't know. It seemed like an interesting switch. I hadn't really seen anything like it. Of course, I haven't been looking for anything like it. I think it was coming in at like $8,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. So, which sounds like a steal for something that can push that many packets. But I think sometimes you get what you pay for, as Thomas was alluding to earlier.
Well, one cool thing I did like about the Leaf is the management port is actually just a USB-C port. So you can just use like a C2C cable in your computer, and it exposes like the serial interface. So you just console into it with just one cable, USB-C. Thought that was kind of cool.
That's cool. Did you have to install some special drivers for it, or did you just pull them right off the internet?
Nope. On my Mac, I plugged it in, and I used the screen utility in the terminal, and it interacted just like console. They've got something built into the port, so it was super easy. I couldn't figure out how to get into it at first for management, and then I saw the port, and I just tried a cable, and sure enough, it responded over console, and I could go through the command line just with the USB-C cable.
Interesting. Is it going to work with my compact Windows XP laptop, though?
Probably not, and you probably shouldn't be using that.
Somebody was asking in the Slack the other day for building basic websites. It didn't occur to me that people still use just static templates for content that doesn't change very often, but it absolutely makes sense. So, Thomas, you recommended HTML5up.net, and I think Ollie said something like w3layouts.com. I clicked on the link for HTML5up. It looked like it was some pretty clean-looking little templates, and they're inexpensive, right?
So those are completely free.
Free. Free is inexpensive, yes.
And by the way, hosting static HTML content is coming back in a big way. For example, if you think about eShops, you know, stuff running Magento or WooCommerce, you know, PHP applications, which are extremely, extremely power hungry when scaling, a lot of eShops are actually moving to statically rendered HTML pages. And, you know, they, of course, combine that with backend search and stuff like that, but a large part of the web is moving back into statically hosted pages because you don't need server power, you don't need processing power, you can distribute that all through CDNs and, you know, geo-local caching and stuff like that. So static pages are absolutely, you know, still being utilized very much and even gaining on popularity lately.
So, and I'm just unfamiliar with this stuff entirely. Does that mean if you're running an eShop, you would have like some kind of cloud-based provider and you just pull that into your static templates? So they're really doing all the heavy lifting and you just have kind of the little front end for it? Or, I mean, are you still hosting the database and all that stuff? Like, what do you mean?
So you are, of course, hosting the database. And for example, the search is going off to your database. But when you search for something, it's just a redirect to a statically rendered HTML page. You aren't loading live data from the server backend, which is what saves all of the processing power, especially with Magento and WooCommerce and the PHP stuff. You know, I know a big eShop web shop here in Slovakia that is paying, you know, and this is in Slovakia, this is a local, you know, we are a 6 million country, and they are paying, I think, somewhere around $9,000 a month for their servers for their eShop. And it's just that power hungry, you know, WordPress plugins and, as I said, Magento, WooCommerce and whatever. It's just that power hungry. You can't scale it horizontally. You have to scale it vertically, and it's just expensive. And so, yeah, a lot of the trend is moving to partially static rendered web pages with functionality like search and comments, feedback and stuff like that. But still, of course, that has to be server side.
Gotcha. Right,
but as much content as you can load as a static content and offload to a CDN, you know, that just makes it much cheaper in the long
term. So does that mean like the time where you enter a new product in your database, it just will automatically create a static page and then have it sitting there? So
it renders it out to a static page and it sends that to the CDN. Process.
Gotcha. Yeah. So instead of building every time somebody queries it, so you get 10,000 queries for that and it builds it real time, It just builds it once, and then people just pull that one static page.
That's exactly the use case.
Hmm. Yeah, there's services like one of my favorite ones that I use is called Netlify, and they will bundle and host the site, and their free tier is super generous. So for most like low traffic sites or blogs and stuff, you can pretty much host it for free. And so instead of having like a WordPress backend, you can write like a markdown file that has like your blog post, and you can make sure it all works, and then you can bundle it and then ship it on Netlify, and then they put it out on the CDN. And as long as you don't have a ton of traffic, you don't really have to pay for the site. And I think most people that have like private static websites and stuff could host their websites for free. There's so much tooling out there now and frameworks for this to help build the static pages, but they load super quick. There's a bunch of JavaScript like tools that you can take like your blog posts and throw them into like a JSON object, and then you can have the search happen through their browser without hitting the backend, and you just build that stuff as you put new posts out.
So what do you think?
It's super popular.
The internet's going to look like 10 years from now. Do you think most people are going to move to infrastructure like that where it builds static pages, or do you think most people are going to move to services like Squarespace where you just kind of cloud host, go in there, click, you're done, and they take care of all the CD and all the heavy lifting on the back end? Because Squarespace is only like, was it like $10 a month or something? It's pretty affordable. Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I mean, with network infrastructure changing, tooling changing, who knows?
I'll make a pretty safe prediction. 10 years, the internet will have cats, porn, and people arguing.
Gotcha. And that's just Mike's corner of the internet. He's always arguing about his cat porn.
Those are his bookmarks.
I actually, in one of those Facebook groups about the, you know, hoarding from the COVID-19, I found several people that were hunting for bottled water for their cats. I was like, we've got a long ways to go if that's your primary concern.
Hey, man.
We're supposed to be on happy topics.
Yeah, you gotta prep.
We're going right back.
I know, there. You're sucking us back into the cesspool. Thanks, Mike.
So, speaking of, a lot of what's happening currently is there is a lot of stuff moving to serverless, of course. You know, we have things like Lambda and function-based programming and on-demand execution. There is some extremely cool stuff that AWS and even Google Cloud are doing with compute at the edge. So, you know, AWS and Google and the CDNs, they have a lot of edge locations around the world, but now compute is moving directly to those edge locations for on-demand compute. So you have there is a big wave of basically what's called a no-code, you know, movement happening right now where you aren't even writing code, you're just composing services out of available blueprints, and, you know, it's, so there is that. Then you have movement to static content where you can. So it's just, I don't think there is a single technology that will win. Like Nick said, you know, the tooling is expanding, the available options are expanding, and who would have guessed? People will try to pick the most option which is the cheapest and most comfortable for them, right? So I think there will be a lot of fragmentation between various services. You will still see big fat PHP servers. You will still see, you know, Ruby and Ruby on Rails stuff, although that's really gone into the dark zone now. And then you will see cool new technologies like Lambda, compute at the edge, you know, like no-code movements and people moving to, you know, platforms that provide services for them. So I think it's just, yeah, fragmentation and everybody utilizing the tool that's best for his or her use case and making the most sense financially and, you know, in implementation complexity.
And how many years before that goes away? Because it seems like all these things come and go every few years. Like, oh, this is the new thing now. And then like in some number of years, it's like, oh, you're still doing that?
Well, it also feels like it takes forever for us to completely deprecate old technologies. You know, I think all of us, well, maybe barring Thomas, support some really ancient stuff that should not be on the network anymore. right? It just seems like some stuff just won't die. You know, some technologies just, especially when the government gets a hold of them, there's still so much COBOL in the U.S. government. You know, I think what, like our missile system still works off of like big giant 5 1/4 floppies or something like that. So,
I think it's actually 8-inch floppies.
There you go, even bigger.
So like even older things I didn't even knew existed until I was in the space for 10 or 15 years. I was like, wait, there's something bigger than the 5 1/4?
Well, and software is getting really interesting now too, because
I was going to make a joke there at Mike's expense. I'm just going to leave it at that.
It goes along with his cat porn. Anyway, what were you saying, Nick?
I was just saying, and software development is getting really interesting now today, because we have all these really interesting code compiling tools, and now there's all these pseudo languages coming out, and it almost doesn't matter at this point, depending on the application, of course, but there's like just-in-time compilers coming out for PHP. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that it's really easy to take almost any language and then convert it down to like machine level code. So there's all these cool, like brand new languages coming out that are kind of abstractions of other programming languages, and the compiler technology is getting pretty insane.
I remember when I was in college.
So it's almost not going to matter at some point. You just pick a language, write some code, use a compiler,
and go. Yeah, I remember when I was in college in like 2002, back in the long, long ago, we were learning COBOL and assembler and then C++ and then Visual Basic. And I remember how much I loved Visual Basic just because it was so fast and dirty, which very much speaks to my personality. But I really just liked the simplicity of those high level languages, right? Where they do all the interpretation down to some kind of machine language for you. But then they used to make us learn the assembler stuff too, because there's some applications where if you don't do it in assembler, it's not going to be fast enough. But you know what? I've never worked on anything that was so time sensitive that I couldn't write it in the worst high level language you can imagine. It would still be way faster than absolutely necessary. I know there's a lot of optimizations that people can make nowadays. And I guess like with these giant frameworks, I'm assuming that makes a lot of difference, right? If you have a massive framework and you need it to use as little compute power as possible, right? Because that equals dollars nowadays, especially when you're doing all that cloud-based stuff. Mm-hmm. That really makes sense,
so,
right?
Actually, it's the opposite way around. Compute is cheap. People are expensive.
Huh?
There is not enough programmers. There is not enough, you know, there is always more demand for developers. And also, developers want to use cool new technologies. You know, if you write something in assembly, you are limiting yourself to a tiny pool of developers that will be able to maintain it going long term, right? So compute is really cheap. You know, it's you want a code base that's maintainable, that's up to date, that's secure, that's scalable, that's with good tooling, and you know that you won't get with any technology like, you know, assembly or, you know, super old C or something similar, right? So it's a much more complicated debate than just, you know, is it fast? That's not the right question. The right question is, you know, is it scalable? Is it secure? Will we be able to maintain it going long term, etc.
All the things that somebody who develops a top-notch piece of software would know, right?
These are the things that we
do. I got a man on the inside over here, Thomas. For sure. Because, I mean, that's the lens you look at the world through now, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's,
yeah, for sure.
And that's why a lot of people are moving to things like Lambda, because if you can break your code into, like, Lambda functions, they charge per 100 millisecond execution or something. So even if you have a big workload, you can just break that into more and more smaller queue jobs. And the free tier is like a couple million requests or something per month, completely free on Lambda. So as long as you don't go over a certain threshold per queue job, it's basically free for a small application. So yeah, the compute is getting cheaper and cheaper. And now all these companies like Amazon and Google's compute cloud and Azure, they're all trying to compete with these same services. So now you have all these options, but we still need more people writing software.
Right. It's Like you said, you have to have the know-how to be able to chop it into smaller bits to actually take advantage of that, right? People that, I guess, are still doing it the old way aren't going to be able to take advantage of those efficiencies, right? And that's where those guys probably make a lot of their money.
It just depends. Like software architecture, I could probably talk hours about it. It's a you know, running a software company, it's a thing we discuss pretty much daily. And for example, even for us, we've looked at Lambda, we've looked at Beanstalk, we've looked at SQS, we've looked at, you know, NoSQL databases and all kinds of different stuff. And it's always a discussion even for us internally, you know, designing products and segmenting microservices and how do you do stuff. It's, you know, it's a topic unto itself, and it's a constant evolving continuous discussion with pros and cons at each side of the discussion. So
do you think
there is no single answer, you know, there is no single is right, or use this technology or use this language.
Well, a few things in the world are that black and white, right? But do you think take me for example, learning to program a million years ago and then mostly just scripting up into this point, do you think it would be easier for somebody brand new to programming to learn all the new ways, the more modern techniques to do it, or somebody who knew the old school ways and have kind of been hanging on to that for a long time? What do you think is easier to pick up the new stuff? Because like lambdas and all of that interactivity, that's all great.
Excluding the actual infrastructure and architecture, you can learn a lot of programming fundamentals, but the hard part is now tooling. Like if you learn a language, the editor and the tools you're going to use and the testing suites that you're going to use, and there's so many different pieces and different options now that I think it's harder for someone to build larger scale software until you go through this huge hurdle of like figuring out what tools you're supposed to use and what code editor you're going to use and what works with like working with a team and working with things like Git. So there's so many options now, and a lot of people spend a ton of time starting off figuring all that stuff out before they actually write software.
I think that's the easy part, right? Because that's just getting started as a software developer. The hard part is all the frameworks. You know, the way software development is today, you don't write things from scratch. Use frameworks. And this is not a bad thing. This is good because those frameworks are tested by, you know, thousands and thousands of people. They're secured by thousands and thousands of people. They're analyzed by industry-leading, developers who know much more than you do about how you should do authentication, how you should do security, how you should handle database transaction, how you should handle the abstraction layer, all of this. You know, you don't want to write all of this from scratch. It's not possible to write all of this from scratch. So as soon as you get, you know, over the hurdle of the setup of the tooling, which is honestly just a setup to get started, you now have to pick your frameworks, you now have to learn the frameworks, and you now have to understand the framework as a concept, how it works, how it interacts with its individual modules. And that honestly is a major hurdle which takes a large amount of time. For example, we were implementing the remote cores, the remote proxies, local agents, however you want to call it, for Unimus 2.0. You know, and that requires bare bones TCP communication, which should still be secure though, and there is connection pooling, and there is timeouts, and there is buffer bold, and there is buffer handling and security around all of this. And, you know, I asked our developer that, you know, realistically, basically, you know, how long is this going to take? You know, it's the usual estimate question, right? And he said, well, I can't tell you that until I read about 5,000 lines of the framework which we are going to use, right? So, and we use Spring Security and Spring TCP, and we use the Spring framework for Unimus, right? But so even to be able to answer a basic question of, you know, how long will something take and what is the complexity of this implementation, first you have to study a 5,000 line of a framework.
Dig under the hood. Yeah.
Right. So a lot of the development time is not spent developing. It's spent learning the framework, working with the frameworks, and you know, bending them to your will, basically, and understanding them enough to be able to accomplish the job that you want today. So since everything is, you know, framework based today, it doesn't really matter if you are new or old to programming. So this is where I'm getting to. It doesn't really matter if you are new or old. No, you will still be picking up something which you don't understand, even if you understand the language. Gotcha.
You know,
and if you are starting, you won't understand the framework.
It kind of sounds like you're a pilot, but you can't just get into any airplane and immediately know how to fly it, right? The instrumentation is going to be different, the way you operate it. So while you're a programmer, you still have to figure out how the framework works. You know, how to take off, how to check it out, you know, just when this light goes off on the dash, what does that actually mean? You know, you just got to know all the basics before you can actually get in there. But how do you figure out which airplane's the best airplane for you? Seems like a pretty daunting task then.
Luckily, there's so much cheap education material out there, which is kind of makes things a lot easier. If you want to learn something, there's a lot of really high quality places that you can get course material on. Just in your spare time, which is, you know, didn't exist years ago. So that does help a lot.
I mean, if you look at it, we can even go to things like scripting and you know, back to other core knowledge of networking, right? So let's say you want to write some automation by yourself, right? So usually, first of all, the language would be, or the question would be, which language do I use, right? And the answer of that is, okay, so which languages have the best support for network scripting and network operations? You do some research and find out, yeah, that's probably Python, right? Python has the most varied and the most available libraries for network communication and network scripting. All right, so then you decide, well, I need SSH, right? And I have no idea how SSH works from scratch. I have no idea how to write cryptography functions, which means I need a library for SSH, right? And then, okay, but how do I interact with devices? How do I deal with CLIs? How do I do terminal emulation? And then you figure out, okay, so I probably need to use Paramico or NetMico or Napalm or something. And then suddenly we are back to frameworks, right? So even if there's something as simple as I want to, you know, write some script that connects to some devices and does something, right? Basics of automation, suddenly you have to learn, you know, Paramico, NetMico, Napalm, whatever you choose. Suddenly you have to learn some SSH library. Suddenly you have to learn probably, you know, at some point a web interface would be nice. And then you need to learn how Flask works in Python and how to, you know, build Flasks and modules and stuff like that. And suddenly you realize this is a job for a team. And, you know, that's how software development goes today. It's
that
not
was all
anymore
a hypothetical scenario, right, Thomas?
Well, hopefully. So normally normally you would just buy software that does this for you, because if you want to do this, you know, properly at production grade quality, you know, that requires a whole different ordeal of time to catch all the edge cases, handle all the exceptions and errors and logs and blah, blah, blah. So, at some point it makes more sense to just purchase the software unless you want to maintain it for years and years and et cetera. But that's a different debate. What I was getting into is, even with something as simple as I want to script a few switches, right? You run into this, okay, I have to learn a framework first. I don't want to say problem. You run into this thing, and it's across all of programming today. So anything you want to do, you will have to utilize outside libraries, you will have to utilize frameworks, you will have to learn all of it to be able to be effectively use it. And I'm probably talking way too much about stuff that's not interesting enough.
I think people just love that sexy Latvian accent you have.
Yeah. Wrong European country, but I'll take it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at a MikroTik link and I said, it was talking about Latvians. I said Latvian. Slovakian accent. Oh man. All right, let's move on then. So I know I've been hurt before. We've been burned by this before. Looking inside of the MikroTik files, decorrecting them, decompressing them, what have you. One time we found an April Fool's joke, which was so funny with new hardware, but this one seems to be a little bit more legitimate. Somebody looked at the kernel object file in version 7.0b5, and they found some reference to some, I think, unannounced CCRs, right? CCR 2004s. And there's a lot of alphabet soup there. So several interesting things I heard. I mean, there's always rumors, right? I'm assuming some of this is what's going to be announced at the, or would have been announced at the US MUM or maybe European MUMs. But let me see, what was some of the speculation? I think there was some 802.1AY or something like that. What is it?
The 60 gigahertz stuff.
Yeah, it's like 60 gigahertz where it can bond multiple channels together to get like 20 or 40 megabits through it. Or, gigabit.
Wow, that's not very fast. 20 megabit
dollars
per second?
Yeah. Sarah, that's nothing today. Yeah. So a lot of scuttlebutt about that. And I think somebody was talking about some of the parts. Perhaps they would actually be modules that would slide into a chassis even. Who knows, right? Maybe a modular system coming our way. I can't remember. I think Thrift likes to speculate on a lot of that stuff, doesn't he, Mike?
Yeah, well, and then so the product numbers that are in that forum post, they mostly correlate to known Microtik, you know, product naming conventions. You know, I'm looking at their wiki page right now. You know, XC is a combo 1025 SFP plus. XS is a 25 gig SFP plus. So a lot of those numbers are, you can translate them into what they actually are from the Microtik page. Obviously, we don't know the underlying, you know, CPU system. But where Thrift comes in is that he knows all these chips and their interface capabilities. And so then there's speculation over, you know, it seems to be this Aperna Labs ARM chip due to something else in the code. But then he's like, well, but then, you know, that chip doesn't support this network interface configuration. So there's this big spider hole of what chips it may actually be based on what the chip supports.
That guy's such
and
a
then
man.
Combined with this. I think the prevailing idea is that it'll be a dual chip. It'll have the Aperna Labs as, you know, doing, you know, running router OS, and then some other chip that meets this network configuration that actually does the packet forwarding.
Gotcha. So there, yeah, so 200 gig interfaces maybe on some of this stuff.
If you want to speculate, the interesting thing is, if you remember, about a year ago, I think there were some speculations or leaks that Microtik was maybe going to utilize some built-in chipset functions for one switch to basically appear as a transparent extender of another device in router OS.
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So it would be interesting, and this is pure speculation based on nothing, it would be very interesting if these are indeed cards in a chassis, like line cards in a chassis, which utilize, you know, the local processor as some of a, you know, connector to a underlying management router system. So these cards do have local compute and do have processing power and run router OS, but in reality you have a single management system which just sees all of these cards as modules and as ports in a bigger chassis. And I'm probably way off on what this really is.
Cool.
This would be super interesting and super cool.
You know what I find interesting too about this forum post is that people have been going back and forth for a while, and Microtik has neither deleted the post nor commented on it, or they're just letting people go wild. So I don't know what that means.
It's
interesting.
So, yeah. So, you know, I mean, one thing it could be that they just find it humorous. It's like, oh, look at these funny people just making things. Let's just see what they come
see
up with
where
next.
It goes.
They're just doing market research right on their forum, seeing what people
this
want.
This is how they find out what new products to develop. See where people's speculations
exactly.
go.
I do remember hearing quite a bit of chatter about a potential new, you know, CCR type platform that was not publicly revealed that any of the mums that they've been working on.
Have we seen a CCR release that's not tile-based yet? My brain's not working right now.
No.
Not yet.
All right. So this might be the first foray into a CCR that's not tile.
Well, with all of the problems that tile has caused Mikrotik over the years, and I can't even imagine how much development time they had to sink into supporting tile since, I mean, the tile development ecosystem is completely dead at this point. You know, the SDKs and the modules and everything else are dead because of all the acquisitions of tile over the years. We know Mikrotik is not using the official kernel code or the open source code for tile available in the kernel, since the deprecation of the tile 3 from the kernel did not affect them in any way. So we know they have custom tile drivers and implementations and libraries. You can just imagine how much time that took to develop and troubleshoot and debug and everything else. So tile is definitely staying with us for a long time, but there is no chance of new products running tile anymore, right? That processor architecture is dead. So
not because you said that, because you said that
they're gonna spite you.
This summer there's going to be a new tile-based CCR.
Maybe they just bought out the stock of some remaining chip. I don't know, maybe. But you would think.
You open up Normus's garage and it's just stacked floor to ceiling with tile processors. Is that what you're...
Gotta use them.
Yeah, I gotta do something with them. You would think, you know, at some point, sooner or later, the CCR series is getting old. And as we can see with the new devices coming out with, you know, 40 gig interfaces in Mikrotik, and then with 100 or more gig interfaces in competitors, Mikrotik will have to release something that's newer, faster, and having, you know, no more tile to go back to. Some CCRs will be released and they will be running something new, and this is likely the first time we are seeing them. We just don't know what they are yet.
Well, in that product naming convention page, they do have a letter combination for 100 gig interfaces. So it's at least gotten that far that they've come up with a letter combination for it.
Something on the roadmap. The European MUM was already supposed to have happened, right?
I think it was supposed to be next week or 2 weeks from now.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, I think 2 weeks from now. I can check.
So still pretty soon in the future. I wonder if they'll go ahead and make, even though it's delayed, I wonder if they'll go ahead and make hardware announcements.
So it was March 26, 27.
Okay.
It's exciting time with Mikrotik. I mean, I just saw that the long ago with VXLAN it being introduced in version 7, and there was like VRRP connection tracks sync being introduced. But also something interesting with the Vengeance product that Baltic sells, an engineer that is no longer with Baltic, his name was Dan, he actually did some testing, and apparently once you get up to like the 40 gigabit traffic through the through router OS, there's like some weird out of order packet issue that still has to be addressed, which I'm curious what's going to happen with that now that they're planning on 100 gigabit interfaces and stuff. But through testing in iPerf, there was an issue where over a certain threshold, RouterOS was just like causing some weird out of order packet thing, and it was confirmed with Mikrotik, and we haven't heard anything back about that yet.
Interesting.
So I'm curious how that's
going. Well, the first generation of 100 gig interfaces could be switched interfaces as opposed to routed, I guess. And then, you know, they'll say, well, you know, this is really a switch, not a router, so don't try and run, you know, 100 gigs from one subnet to the other on this thing.
With the number of people posting in Facebook about the poor routing capacity of the CRS series, can you imagine when they come out with a 100 gig switch and it's not a router? What are these people going to try to do? Oh, I bought this 100 gig router and it can only do 75 megabit. What the hell?
I don't want to use the switch chip. I want to use the CPU.
Yeah.
This is actually a really interesting discussion, because if you think about it, until the CRS series, everything Microtik has done for 15 years, likely even more, but I think it's 15 years that they make hardware, everything has always been software-based. All forwarding in RouterOS, it's always been software. There has been no dedicated ASIC functionality up until CRS, right? So it will, and CCRs, the current generation with Dialera of CCRs, are also software-based forwarding. You know, each port, each interface on the CCR, it has a direct PCI Express connection to the CPU. And so it will be very interesting to see if the new CCRs are still utilizing this software-only control plane and forwarding plane architecture, or if they did indeed switch to some, you know, control plane versus ASIC forwarding based system. And I suppose we will see, but it will be super interesting to see if Microtik is also changing their plans and their philosophy, basically, and switching from software only forwarding to hardware forwarding.
I mean, they also hired more developers, and I saw by the training center at one point they were doing some like agile software course there, so I think they're really, and now they're, even if you look at their support and documentation, it's going to like a Confluence and like Jira page. Everything is kind of like improving overall process wise back end, and so who knows what's going to happen, but they obviously care a lot about it.
Yeah, I did, you know, to that end, I saw somebody posted, I don't know, maybe it was Ollie or Tommy or somebody, posted up a link to help.microtik.com for the new packet flow diagram explanation in version 6. And it was new to me. And it's really nice because they not only show you the packet flow, but they actually walk through explaining things, which is something they don't traditionally do. It's actually kind of try and break down in human terms, you know, relatable to a normal human, not like a Thomas-like robot that understands machine language natively with his connection straight into the matrix in the back of his head.
Irish.
But no, I think it's great, you know, the direction, so they're sort of moving with that stuff for sure.
Earlier someone made a comment about, you know, how old CCR platform was. Cloudcore.com was registered October 30th, 2011. And that was the first website they had for the CCR series. That was before they even showed it on Microtik.com.
Hmm. That's a while back.
Yeah, it's almost 8.5 years.
Hmm. All right, boyos. So we're at an hour and a half. You guys want to stick a fork in it? I guess your silence is acceptance. All right. Nick. If people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how would you have them do that?
Probably the Brothers with Slack group.
You don't want
to... I mean, I could try to say my last name, but I don't know.
I know. You just need a stage name. Just change it. Change it to something.
A stage name? I'll have to think of that. Maybe it'll be pirate based since you like that so much.
Yeah, so it's we're having kind of like an international America. What was it, Eurovision for who can be the best pirate? You know, Nick or Thomas. Right now, Thomas is you're way in the rear, bud. Thomas used to have the kind of the curly mustachio look going, and maybe he's just making way for the young new scrappy guy to take the crown. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe
no, you said this is all planned. what CDC recommends is when you get a face mask, a respirator, the mustache, it leaks in outside air, and so obviously we are in quarantine, so
I'm actually behind.
I prefer to just smear your face with Crisco.
Don't speak that upon me, Thomas.
Just coat your face in Vaseline, then the mask makes a good seal, and you know, you're good to go. You don't have to worry about it.
I just saw both of those things, the pirate contest / the Nick's last name spelling to his website thing. PirateNick.com is available.
Wow.
Pirate Nick.
Great.
I think Mike still has a website for me registered. I think he's still.
I sure do.
Good deal.
Oh boy.
I sure do. It's on the
commitment to a joke. Also, very, very. I applaud you. Yes.
It's even distributed via Cloudflare.
From maximum availability in these trying times, you definitely want to get to this joke website Mike set up just for me. I appreciate that, bud. All right, so speaking of Mike, Mikey, how would you have people get a hold of you out on the internet?
Leave me alone.
Oh, fair enough.
All right.
I'm busy.
All right.
I like how it's gone from don't to just leave me alone.
Right.
It's getting worse.
Well, he's in self-isolation, so obviously leave him alone.
Gotta have that social disconnect.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense.
Not safe.
Thomas, how would you have people get a hold of you?
As always, just Google for me. You'll find me somewhere. And there is always unimus.net. We have live chat.
Stop saying Google first. So... Say unimus.net first and then everything else. Say that first. That's the important one. You got to sell it, bud. Always be selling. ABC, always be closing. All right. That's what it is.
All right.
Come on, bud. Unimus.net. You can find Thomas. He loves to say live chat him. Slip into his live chat DMs. He loves that. You know, it's
always be unanimous.
Always be unanimous.
Is that a word?
It is now. So something that just popped in my head is one of the last Greg talks I did. I was saying how nobody ever calls me just to say hi anymore. And so I get this call from Mike, and I immediately pick up the phone. And I'm like, "Hey, what you need, bud?" And he's like, "Oh, I just called to say hi because you said nobody." He's trolling. He's trying to troll, but he's being nice. I mean, it's very paradoxical. I didn't understand how that works. Does that work for you, Mike? I mean, did you like catch fire the instant you did that, actually doing something nice?
No.
While trolling?
No. I do nice things all the time. It's just they don't get quite the attention.
Not quite the reaction you were hoping for.
I know, but you know, we had what, like a 15-20 minute conversation? Yeah. just about stuff.
Yeah, shoot the shit, it was nice. It actually was nice. So
after you said, you know, I do nice stuff, I was just waiting for the end, and now I just do it for myself.
Yeah, I treat myself all the time. Well, I was thinking, he's, you know, don't talk to him, leave him alone. That's pretty nice. So, you know, it's a
sparing the other person.
Yeah.
Mike just doesn't want to give us the latest.
I've got somebody that I helped with something. The TV station has stuff in Chicago, and I get emails from their customers. Like they just broadcast other people's stuff. It's like a wholesale type thing. And like I get emails from their customers about network accessibility issues, and it's like, just stop talking. like I stop responding. Like I have yet to be paid by that client. I've stopped responding to them. It's just like, not because they haven't paid me, just because it's like I ask them for stuff, they don't deliver it, and so I'm like, you know what? I just don't want to talk to you anymore. Just leave me alone. Mm. Just
create a new rule, move to trash.
All right. Fair enough. All right. So if you want to find me, I'm Greg at gregsoul.com, where I very occasionally blog. I'm going to be putting out a little bit more stuff here recently. Probably the easiest way to get a hold of me, honestly, is to get a hold of me in the Little Brothers Wisp Slack, and that's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. You go in there, you toss a couple of bones. You support us. You help lift us up in these trying times once again. And you will get access to the patron-only Slack, where there's a lot of good discourse. Speaking of, we have some new patrons. And this go around, it is TP. I'm not sure what his full name is. It's not toilet paper. maybe that was, oh man, this guy registered like 4 weeks ago, which was before the run on toilet paper. So maybe it was some kind of precognition. He knew it was fixing to happen. But we also got Rob Cohen.
Maybe he's already ran out. Oh,
perhaps. Maybe that's why we haven't heard from him. He's run out. We've got Rob Cohen. He's our first Scottish guy. I think he's our first Scottish guy. I don't know. Maybe he's our only Scottish guy. Whatever. We've also got Jesse Rager. R-E-G-I-E-R.
I don't know. I'm looking at it. I can't tell.
Jesse Reger. I'm assuming one of those was correct.
Jesse R.
Yeah. R, like a pirate.
You have the hardest job. You have to try to pronounce everybody's names.
Maybe the E is silent. Maybe it's just Jess. Jesse Reger. Reger.
We have a new patron.
Klaatu Hirata. There you go. Done with that one.
Wait, maybe he's from France and it's Regier.
Oh, why you gotta crap on me like that? You're probably right though, Thomas. That's probably it.
You gotta swab it up.
You gotta roll those R's, bud.
You know, it's some French relatives in the distant past. You never know.
Absolutely. Let's see. Yeah. So get in there, get in the Slack, slide us some DMs if you need something directly, or honestly, most of the best discourse just happens in the Opens channels. All kinds of good stuff. So a lot of the information here was plucked from those very channels, and it makes good fodder. I love talking about that stuff. I love reading what everybody's saying in there. Any questions, comments, you guys, please keep them coming. Anything you want to see or hear from us, if you want us to talk to somebody specific, you let us know. Contact us at the Brothers Wisp or Greg at gregsoul.com. They all go to the same place, honestly. Thank you guys for joining. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.